It is Monday, March 25th. I'm Scott Seidenberg.
And I'm AJ Hoffman.
Oh, how sweet it is.
And what does Shohei have to say?
Here comes the Vegas Truth.
This is Straight Out of Vegas.
We are Straight Out of Vegas AM, your daily destination for sports conversation with a Vegas lean. Here's what you need to know to start your day.
Just like that, we're down to 16 teams in college basketball.
We'll get some clarification on the Ohtani case as he's scheduled to address the media today.
But I think we can agree that the Vegas lead will be indeed the tournament that's been going on for the last 4 days.
Yes.
6 days, some people would say, but you know.
Well, AJ, first 2 days of the NCAA tournament were incredible. We had upsets galore. I mean, if you were betting, and you know, we talked about this with Fez, the money line underdogs, you did well.
Oh, yeah.
You did. I think it was up 7.1 units after the first 2 days of the tournament. And then the second round came.
Chalk City.
Before we get to the second round, though, going back to the first round, what was your biggest takeaway, whether it was an upset or just a team's performance overall?
I thought James Madison and Grand Canyon and Utah State, like the late games on Friday.
Oh, you mean my money line round robin?
Yes. Yeah. I think the dogs they all showed up well, and they all played great games, and I think at the end of that weekend, usually I think the teams that are going to be most locked in are the teams at the end of the Friday schedule where they've seen these upsets happen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But the with those three games, none of them felt fluky. It felt like the lower seeded teams just
might have been the better team, actually.
Outplayed them. Yeah. So,
well, when you and I talked about it before the games, and I texted you, I said, I'm thinking about doing all three dogs with the spread and maybe sprinkle on the money line or maybe just a money line round robin. And you said, all three are live. Like you at worst are probably going to get two out of three. Like you thought that they could all win, and they all won.
Yeah. So I think if Yale plays Auburn 100 times, like Yale's going to win.
I really don't want to talk about that game.
Okay.
Auburn. Let me just say this. Of all the brackets here at pregame.com, your boy Scott Seidenberg is in first place at 97.5%.
That's incredible.
But Auburn was my national champion, and they got bounced in the first round, which means I have zero chance of winning this bracket challenge.
I wouldn't say zero. I mean,
well, if everyone else's champ gets eliminated,
that's always possible.
Yes.
I mean,
but I
didn't. Fez have St. Mary's or someone winning?
He had St. Mary's in the Final Four.
Oh, okay.
So my national champion is done. Like I had the audacity to pick Auburn to win the national title.
It was a big balls play.
Well, remember, we did a little breakdown, and I had my, you know, cute little KenPom things and my other things to cancel teams out, and I came up with the list of the only viable teams to win the national championship. And I want you to let me know, AJ, if they're still in or if they're out. UConn.
In.
Houston.
In.
Purdue.
In.
Arizona.
In.
Auburn.
Out. You chose poorly.
So... And then Creighton and Duke were also in there, but I disqualified them because they lost their first game in their conference tournament, which was one of my things.
Both in.
And both are in. Yeah. But still. So if you just do like the KenPom thing, UConn, Houston, Purdue, Arizona, Creighton, Duke, and Auburn, the only teams that have a chance to win the national title, Auburn is out. Everyone else is in amongst the final 16. And that's my national
champion. What are the odds? What are the odds?
So, okay. So you say Yale plays Auburn 10 times, they're going to lose 8 out of 10 times.
I think so.
8.5 out of 10 times.
But I think those three games, the James Madison, Grand Canyon, mm-hmm. and Utah State games, I think those three, it's maybe 6 out of 10 they might lose. But, they're very even matchups. So, TCU and Utah State was an 8-9, so it should have been that. Mm-hmm. But the other two those were upsets. But they were, those two teams, Grand Canyon and James Madison, were like the elite class of the mid-major world. And at least on the first day, they played like it. Round of 32, you saw why, they're not in the top 10.
And it was all chalk in the second round. 15-1 favorites go straight up.
What do you think my my favorite bet yesterday was?
Your favorite bet yesterday, I'm gonna say Marquette -4.5.
It was Baylor -4.
Oh, the only one.
The only.
Well, I was thinking Marquette because the way you said it made it seem like it was a bad beat, and Marquette doesn't cover. They only win by four. So I had Colorado,
and Baylor came all the way back. They were down by a million. They came all the way back and took a lead, and then they just stopped playing again. It was like it was such so frustrating. There was a couple games like that yesterday.
Yesterday was more fun than Saturday. Saturday was just boring. Like, I mean, I guess Creighton and the Creighton-Oregon finish.
That was a good game.
Was exciting. And you know what it reminded me?
Although, my God, RIP, thoughts and prayers, if you had Oregon.
I did.
And then you go to overtime and they lose by a million. It's like.
Yeah. Do you know I had Florida Atlantic and they go to overtime and they lose by double. Like, think, and it was the exact same situation in both games. Both Florida Atlantic and Creighton were up by two. Oregon, excuse me. We're up by two, shooting the front end of a 1-1 with under a half a minute left. At that point, you got to think you're like 90-something percent to win the game. And they miss the front end of the 1-1, and the other team goes down, hits a basket. And then both Oregon and Florida Atlantic, two of the worst final possessions you're ever going to see. It's like they just conceded overtime. And not only do they both lose in overtime, they both get beat badly in overtime. So that one was a bummer. But every other game, NC State, Oakland, also another overtime. The other ones were blowouts, never in doubt. And then yesterday, blowout by Purdue, blowout by UConn. Marquette, you know, came down to the wire the first game. Duke, absolute blowout. Alabama, Grand Canyon. As someone who had Grand Canyon both with the points and money line, that was a really frustrating game, AJ.
Yeah.
This is a good Grand Canyon basketball team. Like a team that I was very excited to see in the Sweet 16.
And the way that they played that game against Alabama, like to hold Alabama, who is elite offensively, to hold them to 72 points. It was an incredible performance defensively. They just couldn't make the shots at the end of the game. And you felt it slipping away. But my thought was, because once they took that lead, I said, oh, it's going to be really hard for them not to cover.
They had the building.
The building was all in.
Everything was. But you know what changed it was that 5-point possession for Alabama. So when Grand Canyon's up two and then Alabama gets a basket with the missed free throw, gets the rebound, then gets a basket and one, they got 5 points without Grand Canyon touching the basketball.
There's a couple of these games where that's certainly the moment in that game. The moment in the Baylor game where they're about to tie the game and Jacoby Walter misses two free throws.
Yep.
And
you got to hit your free throws. I tweeted this out, but it's very funny. Okay. And I know everyone's talking about free throws, but took my girlfriend to the sports book on Friday night.
Girls love that.
Okay. Well, she loves college basketball. Okay. And big Gonzaga fan, but she loves college basketball. I told her the three-leg money line round robin that I put in. So she deposited a little money into an account. She had $15. She's like, I'm going to do all three parlay. So she parlays the three teams that I did on Friday night, which was the three underdogs. It was Utah State. It was Grand Canyon. And it was
James Madison.
James Madison, right? So, and it was 15 to win 300. She was thrilled. Mine was much larger than that. So irresponsible. Anyway, so we're at the sports book. And first off, every time Grand Canyon does, because Grand Canyon was the last game. We hit the first two, and then Grand Canyon was the last game. So every time they did something well, she's screaming. She's like, woo! She's wooing. And so I had to tell her, I said, listen, there's a certain decorum in the sports book. You can cheer. We can stand up and clap. We can, you know, get hyped. But, like, the loud wooing, you never know what the guy next to you has on his ticket. So you got a $15 parlay, sweetheart. I know you're excited about it. But the guy next to us might have St. Mary's for, like, $25,000. We can't be wooing in his ear.
Yeah.
So she's like, okay. But then she now says, every time someone goes to the free throw line, she screams at the big screen. game if you don't make your free throws.
Oh, boy.
Boom. So every time she says it, right, our team makes the free throws. Every time she says it, like when the other team's up, like in a taunting fashion, they miss the free throw. So now I'm like superstitious. I'm doing this all day yesterday. Every time a player goes to the line, I'm like, can't win the game if you don't hit your free throws. Let's go. And then somebody on the other team misses. I'm taunting. Can't win the game if you don't make your free throws. Let's go. Let's talk about Grand Canyon and making free throws. And you could talk about Baylor as well.
You could talk about Texas A&M.
Yesterday was a clinic in can't win the game if you don't make your free throws. Grand Canyon had every opportunity. Baylor had every opportunity. Texas A&M had every opportunity. You cash in half of those misses, completely different ballgames.
No doubt.
For all the teams, not just one of them. But, yeah, Grand Canyon was a bummer to me. They had a chance. They lost it. I'm not thrilled with Alabama. I think UNC is going to trounce them in the Sweet 16. But, yeah, good win for them. Congratulations. And the journey for the Lopes comes to a close. So let's review where we are right now in the brackets. In the East region, it is a 1-5 matchup between UConn and San Diego State. And on the bottom half, it's the chalk 3-2 matchup with Illinois and Iowa State. In the West region, it is all chalk with number one North Carolina, number four Alabama, and then number two Arizona against the sixth seed Clemson, who upset the three seed in Baylor. Moving over to the Midwest, you have the one seed Purdue against the five seed Gonzaga, who beat the four in Kansas.
Boy, although Gonzaga looks really good right now.
Great. And then chalk at the bottom with the 2-3 matchup in Creighton and Tennessee. And then over in the South, it is chalk with the 1-4 matchup, Houston and Duke. And the two seed Marquette takes on the 11 seed NC State. We have one double-digit seed in the Sweet 16. If I told you, AJ Hoffman, prior to the tournament beginning, that we would have only one double-digit seed in the Sweet 16.
I would have said, congratulations, Drake.
Okay. We love Drake. But would you have placed that bet, or would you have thought it would have been more? Or maybe less?
It feels about right to me.
Okay.
Like,
of all the double-digit seeds, did you think, besides Drake, somebody else had a chance to get here?
New Mexico, I thought, had a chance. They didn't show up. Uh-huh. But I thought their team was good enough to do it. I thought their path was set up for them to do it. But I think last year, it was so weird to have the teams in that we did, like, to have not only have those teams get to the Sweet 16, but we had teams like going deep into the tournament that weren't, you know, they weren't high seeded teams, but they weren't really thought of as really good teams. Like UConn, I think people knew before the tournament started that UConn was going to be a problem.
Yeah, but when you watched UConn last year, you ignored their seed,
right?
Yeah.
But no one thought Miami or San Diego State or FAU were going to be playing in the Final Four.
No.
So the year after that happens, I think it's easier for people to imagine some Cinderella dancing again, you know? But the reality is, usually the round of 32 is where it hits the fan. It's like these teams are built usually for one upset.
Uh-huh. It's upsets early, chalk late. When you're filling out your bracket, that's the lesson. You pick upsets early, you pick chalk late.
And you know what? Like, you don't have to look any further than Yale yesterday against, they were completely outclassed by San Diego State. James Madison, who looked amazing on day one. They didn't belong in the gym.
Duquesne had no business playing Illinois.
No business playing. So you can go Utah State. Great win for Utah State. And then they get buried yesterday. The round of 32 is usually where you cut the fat. And I like it that way because I think Thursday and Friday, I love these upsets. I love, you know, Oakland beating Kentucky. Those are fun. But when I get to the Sweet 16, and especially when I get to the Final Four, like I want the teams that were great all year, as someone who watches the sport all year, I want those teams to still be there at the end. Mm-hmm. I don't want to see UConn going up against some team that has absolute. I don't want UConn and North Carolina State at the end of the bracket like that.
Yeah,
because I know the result, and I don't want to see that. We look at last year's championship game. It was not an entertaining game. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. because in the Final Four, there was one really, really good team and three teams that were fun stories. I'm okay if one fun story makes the Final Four. One. And preferably, that's like no worse than a 5 or a 6 seed. I don't want multiples of those, and I want the big boys to be swinging at the end. So
it's always better when the blue bloods are in it. I will congratulate myself, as I've done multiple times already on this show. I do have NC State in my Sweet 16. That is the one double-digit team that I picked. I had them, although I had them beating Kentucky, not Oakland. But I did have, if you look here at my bracket, I have NC State, my pick, NC State over Kentucky. You see that?
Strong.
What happened was I had
Texas Tech over Kentucky. So
what happened was NC State won me money on the ACC tournament, so I was like, they're like a feel good for me. Uh-huh. So like I'm riding them.
Are you done with them now?
Or? Oh yeah, I have Marquette over NC State, so okay. That's the matchup. I have 13 out of 16 Sweet 16 teams.
Pretty impressive, Scott.
I said 97%, 97.5%.
What's your available points? That's what matters, right?
I don't have a champion, AJ.
I just want to hear like, because my right now I'm at 450 points. I'm a good distance behind you.
Yeah. My available is 11:30.
See, I have 16:90 available.
I don't have a champion, AJ.
I feel like when we do this show on Friday,
that's what you're going to bring
Friday
up.
Friday morning, I think we may be different.
That's what you're going to okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah.
I'm going to keep asking every time you say what's your bracket at. I'm going to say what's your max points. That's all I care about.
All right. Well, let's go over the spreads for the games that will begin on Thursday in the Sweet 16, and let's see where we think that there might be an inadequacy in the line, or if we think that there will be some movement in the lines. The first game on Thursday will be Clemson against Arizona, and Arizona is a 7.5-point favorite. That seem right to you?
That seems about right to me. I mean, Arizona plays fast, and when you play at their tempo, they have a tendency to have some blowout games. This Clemson team is not a team I've been in love with, obviously, as I didn't have them advancing past the first round, much less into this round. So credit where it's due. They've played really well against two really good offensive teams in New Mexico and Baylor. They're going to be put to the test again. And you saw what happened yesterday was PJ Hall, who's by their best player by far, got into foul trouble, fouled out. And that's going to be a real problem against an Arizona team that has legit bigs that attack the basket. Like, I could see him finding himself in foul trouble again.
Should be a Arizona crowd. The game's in L.A., so you know it's going to be a pro-Arizona crowd. In Boston, if UConn doesn't get to the Final Four, I mean, this is a disappointment right now. I thought maybe Auburn had a chance to beat them, but, like, the path, and this is what Fez talked about this, you play the first you go Big East tournament in – at the Garden,
yeah.
In New York. All right, quick bus ride back to stores. Then you got the first two round games in Brooklyn, and then back to stores, and then up to Boston.
Yeah.
Like, they're no flights. Nope. Like, they don't have to. I mean, they could if they want to. No, whatever. And now the crowd is going to be all UConn in Boston against San Diego State, who played in Spokane. Then we'll fly back down to San Diego, and then fly cross country to play in Boston.
Yeah.
Like, that's like all the extremes here. Like, you're going from... Like, Boston might as well be its own time zone, by the way, like, separate from the East. Like, it gets dark, like, an hour early. Boston's, you don't realize, go look at a map. Boston's really far east, like, much further east than, like, New York. So, that's a far trip. That's mileage on San Diego State. UConn's a 10-point favorite, and I see why.
Yeah, I do, too. I will say San Diego State is a hard team to blow out. There's a reason why I always, like, I didn't back San Diego State yesterday against Yale. In hindsight, I'm kicking myself for not as I was watching that game. But the reason I don't is I don't like laying points with San Diego State, especially any kind of margin. If I've got to win by more than two possessions, I don't like that. And I do like to bet them when they're an underdog because they ugly games up. They're one of the few teams in this tournament that has a big man that's not going to be overwhelmed by UConn size. Ladie is legit. But I don't think that I don't want to get in the way of UConn right now. I mean, they're in juggernaut mode again.
Yep. Alabama and North Carolina are the second game in LA. North Carolina, a 4-point favorite. I'm going to be on UNC because I was not impressed by Alabama against Grand Canyon. And I think maybe Grand Canyon might have shown how to play against Alabama. And what I mean by that is get more than 5 assists and make your free throws. No, but their athleticism drew Alabama into a lot of early fouls. And yes, they didn't make their free throws, but they took 18 free throws in the first half, AJ.
Yeah.
Like, they were 10 of 18 in the first half. If North Carolina gets 18 free throws in the first half, they're not losing this game.
I tend to agree with you. I'm going to be looking at the total in this game.
Over.
And I'm going to want an over. These are two fast teams.
Yep.
And two teams, like North Carolina, don't get me wrong, they play defense. They're a very good defensive team. But they want the game to go. Mm-hmm. And Alabama's hard to stop. So I think that if Grand Canyon slowed the game down with pace, North Carolina won't want to do that. I've not been a big believer in this North Carolina team all year, mostly because I'm not a big believer in the ACC.
And you don't like seeing Armando Bacot on tax commercials?
It's not my favorite. It's not my favorite.
NIL, baby.
But, you know, it is what it is. And I also saw them lose to North Carolina State, which it's hard to wipe that out of my mouth right now.
My big boy, DJ Jones.
It's DJ Burns.
DJ Burns, yeah.
That's right. But I think this is going to be a good game. These are two teams that I don't think have championship ceiling. They're in the Sweet 16. There's a good chance I'm wrong, but as I've watched them over the course of the season, I've seen enough warts on these two teams that I don't think either one of them is going to, you know, cut down nets. So I don't have a great feel for the side, but I do think there's going to be a ton of points scored in this game.
Boy, if we get Arizona against North Carolina, the Caleb Love revenge.
Yeah.
You know, that's going to be a storyline. The second game in Boston, Illinois, Iowa State. Much of the crowd will be gone by then, but there'll still be some crowd there.
Two teams who have fan bases that travel very well.
Like, Iowa State's 2.5-point favorites. I kind of lean towards Illinois here.
I mean, I have Illinois in my bracket over Iowa State. Mm-hmm. I think Illinois is a problematic matchup for Iowa
State.
Does
Illinois have the best player on the court?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, Terrence Shannon is they probably have the two best players on the court.
And sometimes it's as simple as that. Like, when you think about who you're picking in your bracket or who you're betting on, sometimes it just comes down to what's the saying?
Jimmy's and Joe's?
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Like, sometimes it comes down to talent, and Illinois's got the best player on the floor. And when the game's on the line, I want the ball in Terrence Shannon's hand.
Yeah, Terrence Shannon, and I would say that Marcus Domask is probably the next best player, and Dane Danger, who is
Danger,
he was on
Dangerous is middle name.
He was on Baylor a couple years ago. Boy, if he plays anything like he's played this first weekend of games, he's another problem. So this is a really talented Illinois team, but Iowa State, it's funny, Jimmy's and Joe's X's and O's. They are really, really well coached. Mm. And it's not that I don't think Brad Underwood's a good coach. Brad Underwood's just not a coach that I love in tournament settings historically.
Yep.
A guy who's had a lot of tournament failures. But sometimes those guys break through. Mm-hmm. Remember, Bill Self was that for a long time. They're like, oh, he can't win it. And then he won it. And it's like, no, now nobody talks shit about Bill Self anymore because he's really good now. So maybe Brad Underwood breaks through. TJ Otzelberger's a really good coach, though. And he's got this team playing really well right now. I thought that Washington State could maybe give them some trouble, and it was another one of those games where a team melted late, but the final score was a double digit win, and you know they ended up pulling away from them.
On Friday in Dallas, North Carolina State will take on Marquette. Marquette 6.5-point favorites. That seems disrespectful to NC State.
It does, but you know I think of all the teams. And again, we're going to talk about a couple of these teams. I think Marquette, Tennessee, and Illinois all have coaches who people look at them as they're not good tournament coaches. Shaka Smart, I thought his team, and they let Colorado back in that game yesterday. Mm-hmm. But man, they look so good right now. Like they're just playing real. Fundamentally Oklahoma's sound
healthy.
Team. He looks great. Mm-hmm. Cam Jones looks great. Oso looks great. Which, by the way, that matchup between Oso Igodoro and DJ Burns is going to be fun. I don't want to bet against this Marquette team right now. They look like a different team. And you know, the only team that's beat them in the last calendar month is UConn. they're pretty damn good.
Well, double-digit seeds have done – they usually get eliminated when they get to the Sweet 16. But since 2011, They are cover machines. Double-digit dogs, I mean, double-digit seeds as the dog, right, which they most of the time are. Since 2011, 15-7-1 ATS in the Sweet 16.
Okay. Yeah, and Marquette.
That's 68.2%.
Shaka Smart, in general, a coach that I love to back as a dog. But, yeah, I won't be on NC State.
I might be. We go to Detroit, where Gonzaga takes on Purdue. Purdue, 4.5-point favorites. Can the bigs for Gonzaga handle Edie?
No, no one can handle Edie, but the question
although
is...
Although we're one win away from seeing a big cock and then Edie.
Oh, my God. I can't even imagine what would happen.
It's like old school Big East basketball.
Boy, that would be a game. No, I don't think anyone has a chance of, like, stopping Edie. Like, it's just... Here's what Utah State did yesterday that was just dumb.
Collapse on him and allow him to pass like Magic Johnson?
They just kept fouling him.
Well, and he makes
everything. He's gonna make it anyway. Like, if don't go up and try to contest a dunk.
No, but he's also an elite passer, like Jokic. So when they collapse on him, he kicks it out to the 3-point line, and when they're making their threes, it's unstoppable.
Yes, and that's where Gonzaga is gonna have to shoot well. And man, they've been shooting well. What they did to Kansas was impressive. I know Kansas is down. Mm-hmm. They're not as good as they've been in the past, and they're missing their best player. But the guard play that Gonzaga got in that game was impressive. Graham EK outplayed Hunter Dickinson. This is a tough team, and they do have some big bodies. Graham EK, Braden Huff, Ben Gregg. EK got in foul trouble early, and I thought Huff and Gregg did a really good job. And again, they just beat the second best big man in this tournament.
Yeah.
So Hunter Dickinson is no Zach Edey. He's a different set of problems. But you have to assume Zach Edey's going to get his. The question is, how do you work around the rest of the stuff? And I'll be honest. I do think this is one of the matches, and I guess I should have thrown Matt Painter's name into the tournament conversation, but I like Mark Few. I think Mark Few is a much better coach than Matt Painter. Yep. So I'm going to trust him to come up with some kind of game plan to slow this down. And I think it helps that they saw them once already this season. They played this season. Gonzaga and Purdue played. Purdue won that game by 10 points. Now, you'll remember there was a point in this season where people were saying, oh, Gonzaga's not a tournament team. I think Gonzaga today is a much different team than they were then. And they had a big halftime lead in that game, Gonzaga did. So Edie wore them down, and Edie finished that game 25 points and 14 rebounds. Hard to beat when that happens. Mm-hmm. But I do think Gonzaga is going to learn from that, and I think they are they're a live dog here.
We go to Duke and Houston in Dallas. So we talk about a massive pro-Houston crowd. But I will say this. The Duke team that we saw this weekend, that's the team that was preseason number two in the country. That's the team that people said, oh, they should be amongst the top three favorites to win the national title. They looked really good.
The problem I have with that is... If I said, what is the reason that North Carolina beat Duke both times this year? It's because Duke is just soft. Mm. They're not tough.
Kyle Filipowski is a pushover.
If you're going against Houston, you can't be soft. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't get pushed around. And I've seen them get pushed around by a much less physical North Carolina team. Mm-hmm. I don't know how they – like, they're going to get bullied in this game. Now – one thing we saw yesterday, Houston did not get a favorable whistle.
No.
Like, they were – fouls coming early and often. And I think in the first half specifically, a lot of it was self-induced. Houston was just – they were playing – there were dumb fouls being made. The second half, though, the whistles just kept coming. And it was on some ticky-tack stuff. Mm-hmm. If they get that kind of a whistle, Houston's ceiling is limited. You know, we talk about it in the home-road splits. Like, but – again, that game was in Memphis. You mentioned this game's in Dallas. Mm-hmm. I'm imagining there's going to be a heavy Houston persuasion there.
And I think so.
It's hard to be the refs when
seriously. And as much as Houston tried to give that game away yesterday, they still came away victorious. They still made the plays when the game was on the line. Kelvin Sampson, let me rant here for a second. That is some of the dumbest final second coaching I think I've ever seen. And I respect the hell out of this guy. He's one of the greatest coaches, not just like now, of all time in college basketball.
Yeah.
Right? But when you are up three and there's 1.2 seconds left, there is only one shot you are defending, and that is a three-pointer. Why you have your team in man-to-man defense, positioning guys in the paint, and then chasing around screeners?
Yeah.
Why? Here's what you do, AJ. You line up. Forget about guarding the ball. I don't want to guard the inbound. I want all five guys around the three-point line with their backs to the three-point line and their faces looking at the inbounder, holding their hands up and their seven-foot wingspans to the side, and then just dancing left and right, just dancing left and right. And when the person tries to inbound, because where are they going to inbound the ball? They're either going to have to throw it inside the three-point line, right, to a cutter, which is, go ahead, hit the layup. There's 1.2 seconds left.
Yep.
Or they're going to have to throw it over your heads further away from the basket. In that case, you want to take a half-court shot, go ahead. But I'm not letting you get a pass to a guy on the three-point line.
I think if he could rewind, he probably does things a lot differently. He might
maybe foul.
Foul, yeah.
With 9 seconds left, foul.
That's not his.
12 seconds. And I know the announcers kept saying he doesn't do that. He doesn't. Told them he wasn't going to do it.
Yeah, he does.
But once the clock gets down to like 12, foul.
I thought the same way. And I was watching the game with a buddy. I told him, I said he would be smart to foul here. But the problem with that was, if the game did
shooters were gone.
If the game did go to overtime, I mean, they were out of bodies. Everybody's fouled out of that game.
Yeah. Well, that's when you sub in like you're like that kid that the Elwin kid or whatever that made the free throw.
Elvin.
That's when you sub in kids like that to take the fouls.
I think the worst thing that happened, and this was, I mean, again, Samson mismanaged that game, but the fact that 1 second play got to happen because they called a jump ball.
That's a ridiculous jump ball.
I mean, it wasn't even close.
I was like hoping they would just call a foul on the Houston player.
I thought it was just like a pretty clear rebound. The Aggie player
wasn't even on
the ball.
Let it play out.
And they're like, nope, jump ball. That was crazy.
Just let it play out. Like the clock ends. Like, man, game over.
Like I said, there was some, Houston did not get a favorable whistle.
You know what,
though?
Sometimes, and we see this time and time again with national champs, it takes one of those games. To like push you through. And this might have been Houston's game to push them through and maybe never lose again, never lose in this tournament.
Here's what I believe about this Houston team, and it just got tested. I believe Houston is the most difficult team in the country to prepare for on short turnaround. So if you've already played a game and now you have 1 day to game plan for Houston and then play them, that's a nightmare because you're not. Their offense isn't pretty. Like you can't study film on like, oh, he's going to be here. They're going to punch you in the mouth and you have to withstand it and come back at him. I just think it's a very difficult turnaround matchup. And I think Duke is soft. I think Houston's a nightmare matchup for them. So I like Houston's path to get out of this region.
So do I. Yep.
I like them in this first game against Duke a lot.
We have a collective show bet on the plus 140 for Houston to win the region. Finally, in Detroit, it's Creighton against Tennessee, and Tennessee a 2.5-point favorite.
This is one of the tougher ones for me. I have seen Creighton in this tournament look like the Creighton that I've fallen in love with and has done me right over different parts of the season, but I've also seen enough of them to know this can crumble at any moment. And Oregon gave them some real trouble. And stylistically, Oregon was a good matchup for Creighton. It was a good matchup for Creighton because Oregon's going to zone you, and Creighton has a bunch of shooters. So normally it would be like, oh, this is a great matchup. They struggled against that zone. I don't know, man. Tennessee is a team that I think they've got. I talked about having like championship-level ceiling. I think they've got it. It's going to boil down to who hits more shots, and Dalton Connect. I mean, they were in a fight with Texas, and it's because they did not get good shooting. They're 3 of 25 from three. I mean, that no wonder it was a dogfight. You can't shoot 12% and expect to win many games, especially against good teams. I'm going to assume that they shoot better. Kinect and Zakai Ziegler were both 1 of 8 from three. That's not happening again. So I think I lean to the Vols.
All right, your updated futures to win the national championship: UConn plus 210, Houston plus 500, Purdue plus 650, Arizona plus 900, North Carolina 11-1, Tennessee 13-1. Those are your top six.
What's Illinois?
Illinois is 35-1.
Okay. Still find them intriguing.
NC State plus 9,000.
Is that you going for it?
Absolutely not. Although, I don't know, it could be a little Jimmy Valvano thing. Boy, this Shohei Ohtani story just gets more and more bizarre by the day. The latest is that Ohtani is scheduled to meet with reporters today. So he'll try to clarify some of the confusion, I guess, that surrounds his former interpreter, Ipe Mizuhara, who has been fired by the Dodgers. And if you're new to the story, there's an involvement in illegal gambling.
Allegedly.
There's involvement in illegal gambling because Mizuhara had said that, yeah, he was gambling. Remember, he said he was a terrible gambler.
Yeah.
Terrible gambler, he doesn't win. But he accumulated $4.5 million of gambling debt, and money was transferred from Shohei Ohtani's account to the bookie. And first, it was said that Ohtani was covering the debts for his friend, the interpreter. Mm-hmm. And then Ohtani's lawyers were like, no, Ohtani's theft. He was robbed. So we'll find out. But now over the weekend, I don't know if you saw this, AJ. I feel like maybe Ohtani's people are doing the best they can to discredit Mizuhara as much as they can. Because the reports that I saw coming out over the weekend were, we are now finding out, the public is now finding out, that Mizuhara allegedly never graduated from the college that he said he graduated from, and he never worked for the Red Sox, which is what he claimed to have worked for. So there's a lot that is really weird with this story that is yet to be uncovered. But I'm fascinated by it. I'm very curious to see what Ohtani has to say.
I mean, the fact that he's like
UC saying, Riverside, by the way, was the school that allegedly in his biography and according to the Angels and all that stuff, it said that he had graduated from UC Riverside. And then UC Riverside said there's no record of him ever attending the university.
Boy.
Never graduated.
Everybody's just turning on him, huh? Mm-hmm. I'm surprised that Shohei decided to speak. And boy, I mean, I guess will he have an interpreter there? How's it going to work?
It's got to be a new interpreter.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Do we trust a new interpreter? No, but I do think that it's good that he's doing it. I think it's important for him to get out in front of this. And I obviously this whole thing is a PR campaign now.
Yep.
But yeah, I think it's important for him to do it. So I'm glad. I'm excited to hear what he has to say because I imagine he doesn't. If this guy's really his friend, and it seemed like they were friends.
Oh, they were best friends.
Is he gonna like bury him is that gonna really happen, or is he gonna leave that to his PR people to deal with? I don't know, but I'm interested no matter what to hear what he has to say.
The funniest thing I saw on the internet this weekend was Ohtani was batting behind Mookie Betts in the lineup.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were both standing in the on deck area and it just said Ohtani Betts.
Yeah.
Cause they're both standing like next to each other with the back of their jerseys. The other baseball story that I found really fascinating yesterday is the Yankees are playing two exhibition games in Mexico City against a Mexican team, Diablos Rojos del México. And
that's the Red Devils of Mexico.
Exactly. Part of the Red Devils is 41-year-old Robinson Cano.
Okay.
Who hit a homer and drove in two runs.
Don't you know?
A homer and two home runs yesterday against his former team.
Hey.
But also pitching against the Yankees yesterday, signing a 5-game contract with Los Diablos.
Please be Roger Clemens.
Trevor Bauer.
Oh, yeah.
Trevor Bauer pitched against the Yankees yesterday. And in his, you know, I mean, he's worked out for teams. He's, you know, trying to get signed, and he pitched well. He allowed 4 hits, and no runs in three innings, three strikeouts and two walks. After the game, he said, you know, his command was not where he wanted it to be, but he thought he did well. Aaron Boone, Yankee manager, said that Bauer's stuff looked good, and the Yankees just couldn't break through against him. Bauer's 33 years old. He still has good stuff. He still has stuff left in the tank because he didn't pitch all of last season, and he is still not signed to a major league team. Now, I get it. There's you know, maybe a little bad PR around him, but here's the facts.
He's cleared.
He's cleared.
Yeah.
There was no charges. Nothing. He was proven innocent. So, yeah, he was suspended for violating the domestic violence policy, but that's gone because he was right. Like, nothing came of this. So yeah. Why hasn't a team given him a contract?
Yeah, this is one of those, like, Ray Rice never came back. And yeah. It's like, oh, he just didn't have it anymore. No, you know, Ray Rice didn't come back because there was video of him punching his wife.
Yeah.
There's no video here. And the court of law, and it feels like a lot of the court of public opinion has said, you know what? I mean, okay, you're into weird sex stuff. Okay. Like, who are we to judge? And now it's like, I don't understand. There are teams who need pitching.
Yes.
Aaron Boone should probably take a look at it himself. Is he aware that Garrett Cole's not going to be around for a couple months? Like, I don't understand why this guy isn't signed yet. I expect him at some point to get picked up by somebody. There are some teams, I mean, I don't think the Astros have a need for him necessarily right now, unless an injury happened. But if they get one, they should go after him because everybody hates the Astros anyway.
Yeah.
And it's just like, okay, well, one more reason. We'll take this guy. Like, at some point, just lean into it. But, yep. I don't understand. I've seen him. He's pitched like two or three times over the spring.
Mm-hmm.
And every time it's been like, yeah, Bauer looks really good.
Yeah. So still has some stuff. Yeah.
If you're getting this guy for like the veteran minimum salary, why not? Why not take a chance on this? Like, big deal, a little PR hit, okay. Yep.
He said, he said, quote, I thought it'd be fun to pitch against the Yankees and to make some content to entertain the fans. I want to play baseball. I have fun doing it, and there's a lot of things about this organization that are very good, speaking of the Los Diablos. But still, no offers from a major league team for Trevor Bauer.
Can he play in Japan or Korea?
Like, that's what he did last year.
Okay.
He played overseas.
Okay. Overseas. Yep. So, I mean, I guess that's always the fallback if he doesn't find one, but... Man, if I'm a major league team, I'm taking a look at him.
Yeah.
Or, God, if I'm the Oakland A's, I mean, what do you have to lose? You're going to get bad PR. Guess what? We're leaving that town anyway. you know, big deal, bad PR.
On the NBA scoreboard yesterday, the Pelicans defeated the Pistons 114-101, 36 points from Zion Williamson. AJ, I don't want to accuse anybody of anything, but I think Zion might be on the Ozempic.
You think so?
He's dropping some weight, man.
Good for him.
Yeah, looks good. Sixers, a 121-107 win over the Clippers. The Heat took care of the Cavs, 121-84. Bucks beat the Thunder, 118-93. Giannis with 30 points and 19 rebounds. Timberwolves beat the Warriors, 114-110. And the Lakers, a 150-145 win over the Pacers. Anthony Davis, 36 points and 16 boards. I think that game went over. Tonight, you have the Hornets at the Cavs. Cleveland, 12.5-point favorites. Celtics visit the Hawks. Boston laying 11.5. Pistons are at the Knicks. New York, a 16.5-point favorite. Nets are at the Raptors. Brooklyn, 5.5-point favorites. Blazers visit the Rockets. Houston, 11.5. Suns are at the Spurs. Phoenix laying 12.5. Grizzlies at the Nuggets. Denver laying 14.5. These monster spreads in the NBA. Mavericks are at the Jazz. Dallas laying 7.5. That's more moderate. Sixers at the Kings. Sacramento, 8.5-point favorites. Pacers at the Clippers. LA, 6.5-point favorites. And the Bulls, 13-point favorites over the Wizards. That game on and off the board throughout the evening, throughout the overnight last night.
Yeah.
As the NHL regular season winds down, about 10, 11, maybe 12 games left for most teams in the league. Playoff pushes are just heating up the scoreboards now, AJ. The Capitals, a 3-0 win over the Jets. The Capitals are 1 point up on the Red Wings for the second wild card in the Eastern Conference. They have 79 points. They've won 7 of their last 10 games, unlike the Red Wings, who have lost 7 of their last 10 games.
That's the exact opposite, in fact.
But part of the success of this run for the Capitals has been Alexander Ovechkin, who scored 2 more goals yesterday, which is, you know, 847 and 848 of his career. That's a lot of goals. He started the season, the first 43 games, with only 8 goals. In the last 24 games, he has 18 goals scored, including 8 goals in the last 5 games.
Some would call that a hot streak.
For a guy that's had a hot career, 38-year-old? I mean, oh my goodness. TJ Oshie returned to the team. He played his 1,000th game, so they celebrated that. But Ovi, 46 goals behind Gretzky. Does he play another year and try to get it? The way he's scoring right now, I mean, keep playing, right?
Has he already said, like, this is his...
I don't know.
That's wild.
It's amazing. In overtime, the Avalanche, a come-from-behind win over the Penguins, 5-4. Colorado's good at hockey. The Devils, they're so inconsistent, but a good win for them, a 4-0 win over the Islanders. They lose to bad teams. They beat teams that they're competing with, though, in the wild card race. Devils are at 74 points, so 5 points back of Washington for that second wild card spot in the Eastern Conference. Senators beat the Oilers 5-3. The Panthers a 4-1 win over the Flyers. Hurricanes a 2-1 win over the Maple Leafs. Stars double up the Coyotes 4-2. I had Arizona plus a goal and a half. Felt really good about it when it was 2-2 in the third period. But then Dallas took the lead with 5 minutes left. And I was just like, avoid the empty net, avoid the empty net. And Arizona pulled their goaltender with about 2 minutes left. It only took like 10 seconds for them to score. They scored like a minute. It wasn't like one of those bad beats where it's like there's 10 seconds left in the game and the empty netter goes in. No, it was like 2 minutes left by that when they scored the empty netter. So at that point, then I'm just hoping, well, maybe we can get lucky and backdoor a lucky goal here to make it 4-3. But
not to be.
What are you going to do? Lightning, a 3-2 overtime win over the Ducks. Sabres beat the Flames 4-1. And the Canadiens, a 5-1 win over the Kraken. Here's what's on your schedule for tonight. The Golden Knights are at the Blues. VGK minus 150. Here's where the Knights are in the standings. They are holding the second wild card at 83 points. They are 4 points up on the St. Louis Blues, who they play tonight in St. Louis. St. Louis is at 79 points. So the Blues, I don't want to call this a must win when they have 11 games left in the regular season, but when you're playing the team that you are directly chasing and that team, the Golden Knights, has a game in hand, it feels like this is a must win.
It seems that way, yeah.
It feels like if St. Louis doesn't win this game, their chance of catching the Knights, it diminishes. And then the other game tonight is the Kings at the Canucks. Vancouver is minus 130. Vancouver right now well ahead in the race. They're first place in the Pacific. In fact, they have the most points in the Western Conference at 98. So they are tied with the New York Rangers in the race for the President's Trophy awarded to the team with the most points in the regular season. Still have time to use our promo code and save $25 at pregame.com. That's essentially a free best bet. I mean, most best bets, three-star best bets, $25. Some are even less. Well, go to pregame.com, choose what you want to purchase, whether it's a best bet or a package or whatnot, and take $25 off your purchase using our promo code SPRING25. SPRING25 will get you ready for baseball season. SPRING25 gets you $25 off any bet or any purchase at pregame.com. For AJ Hoffman, I'm Scott Seidenberg. We are Straight Out of Vegas. AM.